You know, I'm certainly glad to have always been Miss America and to be the first Miss Kentucky to be Miss America. And being the wife of a former lieutenant governor certainly provides me a lot of wonderful experience crossing the state. But I don't want to dismiss the amount of experience I've actually had working in government. So for 20 years, I have been working as an advocate for our military veterans. And during the year of service, I had working in the nation's capital as Miss America, we worked on congressional legislation with both, you know, the House and the Senate, bipartisan homeless veteran comprehensive pieces of policy that really fundamentally started the decrease of our homeless veteran population as we see it today. And we also worked on prostate cancer's issues with Department of Defense. So I worked with the President, Department of Veterans Affairs, Department of Defense, Department of Labor, all on veterans and military issues. And then in 2014, Governor Beshear asked me to come and be the commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Veterans Affairs, probably one of the most exciting moments I had in government, because that was able to bring all of the best practices and skills I had gained around the country back home to Kentucky and to be able to fundamentally make a difference right here for our Kentucky heroes. And Kentucky has about 300,000 veterans. 24,000 of them are women veterans, which is a growing population for us. And I had worked with the Kentucky Department of Veterans Affairs for many years as an advocate because the department got started under the Patton Henry administration. And so it was really exciting to be able to then take on a leadership position with that department. And it had already grown to about 3 veterans nursing homes, 4 state veteran cemeteries, about 700 employees. We had about a $96 million budget when I came on board. And through my leadership and just the experience I had working with both sides of the aisles and creative relationships I had even outside of government, we were able to grow the department, finish our 4th state veterans nursing home, which was a $40 million facility in Radcliffe, Kentucky. Our 5th state veterans nursing home, which is a $6 million facility in Hyden, Kentucky. That's in eastern Kentucky. We grew our employee base to about 900 employees, which is really one of the only departments in state government that people really champion growing the state employee base, but that's to take care of our heroes, certainly. And we grew the budget to about $102 million. And so when I think about my experience, you know, people always say, you know, thank you for your service to veterans. And I love that, certainly, because my life's mission is to take care of our heroes. My dad is a disabled Vietnam veteran, and I know firsthand the plight of our veterans and what that tragedy is like when a veteran comes home who falls between the cracks in health care and benefits, has a substance abuse issue with PTSD, but is able to turn their life around through government-assisted programming and community-based organizations. But really, it's more than just saying thank you to veterans and serving veterans. Fundamentally, leading a very large statewide department is a wealth of experience. And when you talk about the breadth and depth of the Kentucky Department of Veterans Affairs, it's one of the largest in the executive branch. It's actually larger than some of the cabinets within state government. And so you talk about administering programs and services. You talk about your employee base, overseeing those that many personnel, navigating government when it comes to the personnel cabinet and all the nuances that that takes, healthcare facilities, of course, a budget of that magnitude, which involves restricted funds and unrestricted funds, and then legislative policy. You know, I was a legislative analyst for our department, and not only did I do that under Governor Beshear, but Governor Bevin asked me to stay on as deputy commissioner. So I see that as giving nod to my capabilities of working across the aisles and being able to fundamentally have the experience to do that and to lead that state department. We also did a lot of partnerships with the Secretary State's office when it came to election issues, business issues that surrounded veterans and military, and then, of course, my love for our more historic aspect, which the Secretary of State's office oversees as well with our original land grants for Kentucky. And so when we talk about the Secretary of State's office and all three divisions being elections, business, and the Kentucky Land Office, I've had experience working in all three of those from my job as commissioner and deputy commissioner. And so that transition, you know, no one should take that lightly. When we talk about the ability to transition not only into a new leadership, but in between administrations, I was also on a transition committee for a governor as well. So working in government, making a difference in government, and being fair and impartial is something that I have a reputation for.
Of course, as Secretary of State, you're the chief overseer of elections. Do you think Kentuckians should have to show a photo ID to vote? And if so, How would you enforce this for citizens who maybe don't have a photo ID?
Photo ID is a very interesting topic right now, and we see that across the country. I think that having a government-issued ID for a multitude of reasons is great, even for lower-income people, because it's also can present a barrier to employment and education if they don't have that. However, let's talk truthfully about the logistics of photo ID. First off, a Secretary of State, you don't pass the legislation. A legislator passes the legislation. Second off, the county clerks, as we have talked to them crisscrossing the state, photo ID is actually not their number one concern for fraud. They actually see a greater opportunity in absentee ballots for fraud. And we also see in several niches of government, like trying to issue veterans their IDs, we have run into several issues with that process alone for that niche population. And so when you think about the three specific populations that have extreme barriers to photo IDs, you first have to think about senior citizens. So in our department at KDVA, you know, obviously we oversaw four state veterans nursing homes, and I saw firsthand that that population, one, they love to vote. They're very engaged. But they may not have a photo ID because they're not driving. And so there are three provisions within identifications for elections that Kentucky has that don't involve a photo ID. One is a credit card. The other is a Social Security card. And then being known by the precinct worker, which probably is a little archaic. But, you know, in the smaller counties where you have maybe some older populations and some poll workers, does that really work? I don't know. But county clerks right now tell me that senior citizens, it would be a big barrier to getting them a photo ID. High school seniors. My daughter, thankfully, she had her permit when she was a graduating senior at 17, and she registered to vote because we had that conversation with her. No one else had had that conversation with her. But there has been a greater percentage of high school seniors graduating without getting a driver's license or a permit yet. And some aren't getting it till they're 18. So what form of ID are they going to have that would be considered eligible for photo ID? Then the third, of course, are lower income populations. You know, in order to get a photo ID, you have to have certain pieces of paperwork with you to facilitate that process. And I have yet to see a process that is thorough enough, that is fair, that's affordable and accessible to all. I do know in several of the states that offer or make photo ID mandated for elections that there's a great group called Spread the Vote, and they help facilitate that process for persons who want to go vote who don't have a photo ID. And they estimate that there's about 21 million eligible voters in the United States that don't have a photo ID. And that's about $40 per person, they estimate, to get that. So again, we're talking about a fiscal impact. I get very passionate when people just blanketly ask me, you know, are you for this? Are you not for this? Government isn't a dictatorship. When you go into an office, you have to partner with the people who are impacted by these processes. And you have to set forth a procedure in any piece of legislation that has no room for loose interpretation. And so going into this 2020 budget session, you know, you can look at different pieces of legislative opportunities with legislators, but first you're going to have to come to the table with your county clerks. They have a statewide meeting right after the election at the end of November, and so as Secretary of State elect, you're going to have to show up at that meeting, sit down with them, smooth over some issues that have gone on the past few years. You're going to have to ask them firsthand, What is it like in their counties for their election process? They are the ones, they are boots on the ground in the trenches that facilitate that process. And if you're a county clerk in Bracken County or you're a county clerk in Warren County, those dynamics may look different because your populations are different. What struggles are you having? Right now, what we see conversations around early voting, no excuse absentee voting, extended hours, photo ID. So early voting, what I have found out is there are a lot of county clerks that are a little more apt to consider that over some other issues. No excuse absentee voting scares some of them because they see absentee voting as it even is now as a greater opportunity for fraud. And you may see that sometimes in your longer, your senior assisted living. Is someone else filling those out for those persons who are voting? And then when you get to extended hours, you know, to adding 2 hours to the voting day, to me as a working mom, seems like a very logical move to want to do, because by the time you take your kids to school, you commute to work, you get back home from work and commuting, then it's 6 o'clock and polls are closed. Now, if your employer lets you have time off, great, but not every employer gives you paid time off to do that. So I see extending 2 hours as a great way. However, I was really surprised at talking to some of the county clerks that that's really a non-starter for them because they have such a hard time getting poll workers to work 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. So again, until we partner together to figure out how to facilitate these processes for our end user, that being the voter, we really have to navigate this together. And if there's one thing I have experience in government is before you make some knee-jerk reaction legislatively, how about you bring everyone together that it impacts and figure out how everyone can add a voice to the table to get these election reforms done together, not dragging someone kicking and screaming.
So what I think I'm hearing is you don't want to go on the record in support of a photo ID law until you can bring all those parties that you just talked about together.
I want to be fair, certainly, and I know that everybody wants to get you as a candidate to commit to this and to that, but it's not up to me. It's not up to the Secretary of State. It's actually up to all of those people together who administer this process to make sure if it's something that we see will add more integrity into our election system, if they see this as a real fundamental need, it's something that we all have to do together. Think about how much better government would work if we all led these initiatives together in unison instead of fighting each other. So I actually don't like when people say, can you commit to saying, yes, this is what you're for, or no, this is what you're not for. Secretary of State is a ministerial office. That means you are not there to be discretionary. You are there to be a voice of the people and of the people that you work with as well. And so leading forward in any election reform, I will commit to working together to those parties to see how we can add more integrity. And if that adds more integrity in large, then we'll be for it.
What are your thoughts on the automatic restoration of voting rights for convicted felons? And if you do support that, should there be some exceptions?
Restoration of voting rights is something, you know, Kentucky sadly is behind on fixing this process, certainly. And I feel like that we are, by not addressing this fully, we are providing some unintended consequences to future generations in those families. Because if you're growing up and your parent does not have the right to vote on election day, does that day just come and go without you having a conversation? And so we know from early childhood education, if you don't teach and talk to children while they're young, then they will grow up not understanding the dire need or having passion for this process. And so when you talk about these children, are we, and legislators, by not addressing this, are we creating future generations of unengaged or disengaged voters? And we may very well be. So I look at it in twofold. One, this is a very cost-neutral way to provide a positive incentive for reintegrating people back into society. And yes, there should be provisions, you know, should not be for violent offenders, those of sex crimes or treasonous crimes, certainly. And those have been spelled out quite nicely in other states who have implemented a restoration process. But I also think that we have to have even greater conversations in a bipartisan way about what do second chances look like. You know, I advocated for veterans treatment courts from their very beginning back in 2008, which are alternative sentencing courts for nonviolent offender veterans to be successfully transitioned back into civilian life through alternative programs. So we've seen that some of these programs really do work. And if providing someone the restoration of their voting rights provides, again, a cost-neutral way to be a positive incentive, then we should definitely do that. And it can be done in a plethora of ways, whether it's automatic or not. But I think, again, you have to bring in the people through the Department of Corrections, your probation officers and parole, to figure out what that looks like. And there's some best practices that have been used across the country that certainly Kentucky can emulate.
You mentioned that not applying to violent felony offenders. What about someone who's been convicted of an election-related crime?
Well, I guess I throw election-related crimes into treasonous crimes, and I think that that has been spelled out in a couple of different – throughout different states, so certainly they should be added to that list.
Your Republican opponent has accused you of being silent on what he calls corruption under the current Secretary of State. The Board of Elections has accused her of abusing her position in the way that she used voter data. What are your thoughts on how Allison Lundergan Grimes has run the office, and would you run it any differently?
Well, first off, let's address some of those accusations. First off, what good does it do for a candidate or really anyone who's not inside that circle going through those issues to pontificate on social media? You know, I do feel that if we tweeted a little less and listened a little more and provided more educated opinions when we're involved in the process, then the world would be in a much different place than we are now. And I'm certainly one of those leaders that I'm not ever ready to pass judgment until I'm involved in the process and know all the facts. And I have had that experience and reputation from my very beginning in leading the Kentucky Department of Veterans Affairs on various issues. When it comes to what different type of leadership style, everyone has a different leadership style. I have shown I'm a servant leader. I'm ready to listen to people. I love partnerships. I love being a positive leader. I love the fact that a lot of my employees say that they love the fact that I made them feel like they worked with me and not for me. And I think that that's a very different style going into this office. Now that you're going in as Secretary of State in an atmosphere we've never seen before, where the State Board of Elections is separate from the Secretary of State's office. You're no longer a voting member. You have a non-voting, an ex officio capacity with that board. And so we're going into a 2020 election cycle in a way we've never seen before in Kentucky. And I do think that I am the only candidate that has the experience to be able to go in this changing environment, as I have through many changing environments, and to still be able to meet the objective because I'm ready to be a partner and to be a team player. Again, no one has the same leadership style, and I certainly appreciate some of the initiatives that she has taken when it came to veteran businesses. The one-stop shop portal certainly was a great addition to the Secretary of State's website in some of the election process. You know, the Military and Voting Overseas Act, I think, was wonderful. But again, I'm not going to sit here and compare my leadership style to her leadership style. You know, I want to go in and be a great Secretary of State in my own right through the abilities and experiences that I have.
The General Assembly this year passed a law that stripped Secretary Grimes of much of her power over the State Board of Elections, including being a voting member. If you win the election, would you be comfortable with the law, or do you think the Secretary of State's authority over the board should be reinstated?
So this piece of legislation was very interesting, and especially the fact that it really didn't pass out of committee and then had to be put onto House Bill 114 at the last minute to pass, which there were even Republicans who said this is not right because we have a due process. It didn't pass out of committee, so it shouldn't be put forth. However, it did, and we watched this with great intensity, and I had friends on both sides of the aisle that I was texting through this process, and I was trying to encourage them, listen, you know, there are some interesting parts of this piece of legislation that add former county clerks to the State Board of Elections, which I actually agree with. And I think they should have been added long before that because they have institutional knowledge about elections and would be a wonderful value to that board. But again, that piece of legislation, even if you just took that, provided room for loose interpretation. So now no one except for a judge gets to determine whether those former county clerks get to vote. Now, when I read the first piece of legislation, I said, hey, you know what? According to what I read, it looks like they do have a vote. But then someone else came back and said, no, I don't think they do have a vote. So now a judge has to determine that. Again, if you're going to set for something so aggressive, then have the plan laid out so no one has to question and you don't have to go before a court of law to get that determined. I would like to see the Secretary of State be added back to the State Board of Elections as a vote in some capacity. The Secretary of State has always been the fiscal foot soldier for our county clerks and for the election process, whether it's through the National Association of Secretary of States in trying to get federal money coming back in as every year they pound the pavement to do, whether it is getting that Homeland Security access for those real-time cybersecurity threats, which is vital to the integrity of our system and to the future of our system, or whether it is putting forth maybe some requests toward the legislature, especially in this budget session coming up, where states need to pony up a little bit more. There's a national discussion about that. How much should states be putting forth for the election process? And I do think that we as Kentucky have to put a little more resources behind our county clerks to help them facilitate the transition in their machines, the cybersecurity for their machines, making sure that they've got the poll workers and the time and the types of resources that they need to be able to facilitate that process. And so I believe that with all of those responsibilities that the Secretary of State administers for the elections, that they should have a vote at the table.
A judge ruled this week that the State Board of Elections must remove about 170,000 voters that it had placed on an inactive list. With the election quickly approaching, do you see this as a win for democracy?
Well, let's face it. This has been a really confusing process, right, since its beginning. And I was very concerned about the inactive voter list. I do understand that there is a voter maintenance issue in Kentucky. We do this every election cycle. I am concerned about why so many right now had that happened to. Why had the process slowed down? Had it slowed down before we got to this process, because it had never been this many people in one chunk. So I had a feeling there was probably going to be some legal action take place. My concern right now, as now county clerks have had to have the discussion about this process where people could come in and they're going to be on the secondary list and they're going to have to sign an oath of vote card. Okay, so now they're going to be added back to the list, making sure that this process on November 5th, everyone is on the same page about what to expect at the polls. In the end user, the voter, should be our number one concern. And so now that we've seen this take place, I do think it's a win, because I believe that in the future, when we go through this voter maintenance issue, we need to figure out how to make this fair and impartial for everyone and be transparent. If this is going to take place, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the State Board of Elections, the County Board of Elections, the county clerks, the Secretary of State, everyone should know how this process is implemented and when it's going to be implemented, so you don't have issues as to the credibility of this process. And so I think we're learning a very valuable lesson right now. And so my hope is on November 5th that people feel secure in the process that's being set forth for them when they come in on election day.
All right. Is there anything else you want voters to know about you or your candidacy?
Well, I do want voters to know that, you know, there are three areas at the Secretary of State's office. The media always tends to pick up on the election process, because as a former media person, I certainly understand it is a very high intensity topic for people, and it is constantly in the headlines. However, I do want business owners out there to understand that your business does mean a lot to me. And of the two of us who are running, I am a small business owner, and I understand fundamentally some of the frustrations of starting a business and growing a business. Secretary of State's office houses 250,000 registrations of businesses and organizations throughout the state. It actually is the largest component of the Secretary of State's office. It brings in the revenue arm. So a majority of the revenue is through business administration. A majority of the staff actually is devoted to business administration. So to me, this will be a huge priority to make sure that small businesses, especially throughout the state, a lot of them who are run by women, feel like they are supported by state government. You know, I was in London, Kentucky not too long ago, and we have several small businesses in that area alone who are asking me questions about e-commerce platforms. We understand that in Kentucky, while we might be a little behind on that, that's extra revenue for the moms and dads and the people out there of Kentucky, for their bottom line. And if they have questions navigating even those simplest forms of which database platform or which platform to use digitally, should we be providing them more resources and programming through Small Business Administration, through workforce development or economic development to be able to navigate that? I believe so. And I believe the Secretary of State's office should have a fundamental role in that. And so you will see in me not only one who has the ability to bring integrity to our election, but as a businesswoman who understands first and foremost some of the fundamental needs of our businesses throughout Kentucky to make an economic impact in their community. And lastly, I do also want to let those who love history out there know that, again, I'm a candidate who cares about the history of Kentucky, and that the Secretary of State's office does handle those original land grant records, those archives, and digitizes those online. I'm the only candidate that has experience designing and implementing statewide programs to push forth awareness of historic programs like our Kentucky World War I Centennial Commission. And we did a great Kentucky Poppy Project throughout the state with schools. I have about 36,000 poppies as a part of that project, because we partnered with civic organizations and schools all across the Commonwealth. And when it comes to the historic records, I want to do much the same with our Daughters of the American Revolution, our SAR, our historical societies, because when we talk about tourism too, I mean, that's billions of dollars in industry, over 196,000 jobs, and a large part of tourism has to do with Kentucky history. History matters. It matters to me. It's not a rubber stamp issue, and I want to make sure that the Secretary of State is fundamentally involved in pushing that information out and creating programs and services to really excite and engage people, because again, it brings people to Kentucky. And when you bring people to Kentucky, that brings dollars and cents, and that impacts our community. So I'm a Secretary of State candidate that believes in all of the facets. I want everyone to know what the Secretary of State does, what that office can do for them. And if they need help, they can call us and find out where to go for the information that they need.
We've been speaking with Heather French Henry, the Democratic nominee for Kentucky Secretary of State. We spoke earlier with her Republican opponent, Michael Adams. You can find that interview at our website at WKYUFM.org. For WKU Public Radio, I'm Lisa Autry.